WYPR is here to keep you connected to your community. And as our communities change amid the coronavirus pandemic, that connection is more important than ever before. Member support makes it possible. And if you can, we hope you'll help us out. If you're a sustaining member, consider increasing your monthly pledge or become a new member with a first-time gift. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link. And thanks.
This is Anibon Basu with your Monday Morning Economic Report. There are a growing number of national legislators who support a $15 minimum wage. Once viewed as a fringe idea when it was initially presented in 2012, according to Bloomberg, at least 19 Democrats running for president in 2020 support the increase. Recently, the House of Representatives passed a bill that would raise the minimum wage to $15 by 2025, which could bolster the incomes of between 17 and 27 million workers, according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. Of course, given inflation, $15 in 2025 will be worth less than $15 today. As indicated by writer Alex McIntyre, the current $7.25 per hour national minimum wage is now worth 16% less than when it was enacted in July of 2009. Many proponents of a higher minimum wage seek to change this by indexing the minimum wage to inflation. Others propose a different approach, one that would index the minimum wage to growth in the median wage. The Raise the Wage Act, passed by the House last month, would implement the latter strategy. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Tuesday Morning Economic Report. Not only did working women put in longer hours on the job last year, but they also collectively spent more time caring for their children and completed more work around the house than they did a year earlier. They also spent less time relaxing or socializing. They also slept less. These unhappy tidings emerge from the annual American Time Use Survey recently released by the Labor Department. As indicated by writers David Harrison and Sue Oh, the new data hint at the challenges working women continue to face when juggling an array of life's obligations. According to the data, employed women worked approximately 7 hours and 20 minutes during the average workday last year, which represents the most time spent on the job since the survey commenced in 2003. Men spent slightly less than 8 hours a day on the job, with the gap between the average workday for men and women falling to its smallest level on record. But here's the thing. After women get off the job, many of them just keep working. Working women spent about a half hour more a day than men did on household chores, such as cooking and cleaning last year. Working women who cared for a child spent an average of 2 hours a day on that commitment in 2018. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Wednesday Morning Economic Report. As a group, economists are simply terrible at forecasting recessions. As indicated by economist Tara Sinclair, economists are still working on an early warning system. The best economists seem able to do is to occasionally recognize that a recession has already begun, but that's still rather underwhelming. Still, there are leading indicators, and sometimes they are quite useful in establishing whether the probability of recession is high or low. As indicated by writer Ben Castleman, one of the signals is a meaningful increase in the unemployment rate. When unemployment rises 0.3 percentage points over its 12-month low, recession risks are elevated. At half a percentage point, the downturn has probably already begun. Other leading indicators include yield curve inversion, which occurs when the interest rate on certain types of short-term debt exceeds the interest rate on certain types of longer-term debt. The Institute for Supply Management's Manufacturing Index can also help. When that index dips below a reading of 45 for an extended period of time, recession is likely. Declines of 15% or more in consumer sentiment also serve as early warning mechanisms. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Thursday Morning Economic Report. Absent a change in policy, in a few months, the U.S. will impose a new round of tariffs on Chinese goods that will, for the first time, target an array of apparel. When and if that happens, the price of women's and girls' clothes will be generally more heavily impacted than the price of men's and boys' clothes. According to a Wall Street Journal analysis, about 42%, or more than $23 billion worth of women's and girls' clothing and shoes imported to the U.S. last year came from China. By contrast, 26% of men's and boys' clothing and shoes imported to the U.S. came from China, which translated into less than $11 billion. The Wall Street Journal analysis focused on data supplied by the U.S. Trade Representative and the Census Bureau. One reason that more female clothing comes from China than male clothing has to do with how often women make purchases. Women's fashions change more frequently, and China's massive apparel manufacturing industry has the capacity to churn out clothing embodying the latest trends, this according to apparel industry experts. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Friday Morning Economic Report. Many families remain fixated on the issues of rising college tuitions and student debt, and with good reason. Average student debt has climbed from around $11,000 in 1990 to $35,000 in 2018. As indicated by Bloomberg, the cost of tuition at public colleges has roughly tripled over that period. But there's more at work than tuition. In a 2015 analysis, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development found that housing costs represent a significant portion of student debt. Part of this is attributable to widespread development of luxury student housing adjacent to campuses. While the term luxury is subjective, rents around college campuses have been rising rapidly in places like Austin, Texas, Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Fort Collins, Colorado. Even after adjusting for inflation from 1989 to 2017, the estimated cost of on- and off-campus room and board at a four-year public university climbed more than 82%, according to figures compiled by the College Board. Rents across the U.S. climbed only about 19% over that same period. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu.